Welcome to Map Hackers. Today's topic was brought on by a conversation I've had with many people when they find out what I do for a living. So our word for today is maps, right? A map seems like a very simple concept, but I think its definition is kind of is colored by your experience. So a map means something different to everybody. Oh, and as always, I'm Matt Woodleaf and a very, very amateur podcast host. So let's meet today's panel. So let's see, who do we have on the line today? Catherine, introduce yourself, please.
Hey, I'm Catherine, and I think I'm just going to go with my normal intro. I'm an anthropologist, and that's really the basis for how I got into maps and how I view maps. So I'll elaborate on that later. Mike? Nice.
Yeah, my name is Mike. Nice to meet all of you again. I am a fanatic with maps as well as drones, and happy to be supporting the podcast. Rami?
Yep, I'm Rami, and I guess maps are my bread and butter.
Kira?
Hey, I'm Kira, and I got interested in maps from my landscape architecture background when we started to work with site planning. So it's always been a very visual tool for me. And I love looking at maps and making maps.
And one more last but not least panelist, Mr. Adam Pister.
Hi, everybody. I'm Adam. I think maps are secret, and I don't want to tell anybody what a map is. Mm-hmm. Just kidding. I love maps. I'm interested to hear how everybody came to them and why they think they're valuable. It's fun.
Yeah, actually, I think that's a great first question for the panel, Adam. So how did you get into maps? And I guess, personally, what does a map mean to you? I guess since I'm posing the question, I have to answer it first. So I got into maps actually from my grandfather. He collected maps. I thought they were interesting. And my first career was actually a history teacher. So I always used maps as the context of historical happenings. So history doesn't just happen in a vacuum. It happens someplace in the world. So we use maps to explain where and why things happen the way that they do. After history didn't quite work out, I always liked computers and geography. So GIS seemed like a natural fit. I Googled it. I was like, what kind of jobs do I have to do with computers and geography? And GIS came up, and a certificate was, I didn't take any tests. I just signed up and took classes. And speaking of secret maps, that's what I started doing first, was super secret maps. So that's a little story, a little bit of my background getting into GIS and maps. Anyone want to share their story?
Well, I can go. I guess I got into them when I was pretty young also. And my mom used to work at a publishing house, and I spent some time with her at that publishing house. And I always found myself looking at atlases. And funny enough, I've got like a lot of pictures from my childhood where I'm just getting an atlas, and I'm so proud of it. And I guess those were my very first memories of maps.
This is the coolest question ever. I love these responses. Okay, wait, I started talking. Does that mean I have to go?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I got into GIS actually through archaeology. Out of undergrad, I was doing pedestrian survey in the U.S. Southwest. And I was lucky enough to have a mentor who said, now you're going to map things for us. And I said, yes, let's do this. And the rest is history. So I did that for several years. But yeah, needless to say, maps have always like been tied to the movements of people and understanding how people work, you know, that people used to carve maps for each other in stone thousands of years ago. It's just like a really powerful means of communication.
It's interesting that you say that, Catherine, because I think that a lot of people today think of maps, right? You think, okay, I need a map, but that ultimately derives to, okay, I'm probably going somewhere, right? And we think about our devices, mm-hmm. and we think about leveraging a map in terms of going from point A to point B. But it's interesting now in kind of, I think, all of our careers, seeing just how much influence maps have. It's funny, my story around maps kind of starts similar to Rami's, in that my mom actually worked for a mapping company, and I was exposed to maps when I was 8 years old and would go with her to work and whatnot. And so it kind of became ingrained in me. Circle back to my career, and now it's one of those things where I've been working in the industry for almost 11 years now. And it's just so amazing to see how much farther maps have influence versus just looking at a map for point A to point B directions. Kind of a fascinating topic.
Yeah, for sure.
Kara, what about you?
Yes, it all happened when I was studying landscape architecture and needing to understand the site and how it worked, where it was, what it looked like. And the only way we had to do that was with maps. And when I was starting to learn GIS, it seemed very challenging and very technical. And to my brain, it did seem like rocket science at the time. So I took as many classes as I could about mapping, learning how to work with the data. And then a professor said to me, "Kira, it's not rocket science. You can do it. It's going to be okay." And so I just stuck at it and have used that technique to understand site location and how a site works scientifically, as well as how it works aesthetically. And mapping's always been a central part of that.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. Whenever I'm trying to teach someone about GIS, my first thing is, you're not going to break anything. Just go explore. Because I know when I started, it's like, what am I going to do? Am I going to break the whole system? That's funny.
It's funny that you kind of note that too, Kira, right? Like, maps are not rocket science, yet rocket science uses maps. Which is interesting.
It helps rocket science.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny, you know, when you think about, like, you know, I've gotten this question, like, you know, well, haven't we already mapped everything? And it's like, well, yeah, maybe, but there's always new things to map, right? Whether it's the bottom of the ocean or, frankly, speaking of rocket science, going into space, right? And how do we actually use things like trajectory to get to wherever we're trying to go, and being able to map that out and understand it can really help us in the long future.
But that's like the people component, right? Because like, we're constantly changing our context, and things like, you know, I'm a parcel nerd. So like 3D cadastre, that's a new concept. And we're also, I think it's exciting to be working with maps because it's always changing, right? We always have something new to learn because we have this built environment that we're interacting with, as well as how it impacts our natural environment.
I think this is a really interesting point. So I guess from my own experience in the past, and I've been working with maps, I guess, for the past 12 years, which is technically nothing, but still, when I was first introduced to maps, I was a landscape architect as Kira, or studying landscape architecture, and we mainly worked with Photoshop and AutoCAD to create certain type of maps. And then you eventually figure out geographic information systems and like, okay, no, these maps actually can hold data. And we started back then with layouts and just creating hard copy maps. But then if you look what happened in the past 10 years, it's just mind blowing, because right now you can create a map nearly anywhere on your mobile, on your laptop, on the web, and you can share it. And there's all these different ways to create a map rather than one tool. So you can configure it, you can do it by code, etc. And that opened up a lot of opportunities to create these very interesting maps, because there's a need for it, and each map is telling a story. So we're always going to be innovating, I guess, in that domain.
Yeah, dynamic versus static.
Yeah, I think, and Mike said, hasn't everything already been mapped before? And I think that concept is really colored by people's experience with maps, having that and at least in the U.S., the big transverse Mercator map in the front of the classroom, where Antarctica is super big and Greenland's like 95% of the map, and people think, oh yeah, we've mapped everything, right? But then you get into Kira and Rami's life of landscape architects. Well, yeah, we've mapped the general area of where this thing is, but we haven't mapped out the actual terrain of that space. We haven't mapped where the buildings are going to fit in. We haven't done any of that. So it goes from that macro, this is the world map, where everything's like a general shade of pink, to a landscape architecture plan where there's actual measurements. You know exactly how far things are going to be away. You know the sun angles and being able to like have a really micro vision of what a place looks like. I think that's where my definition of maps as a GIS person can differ from someone a normal person. I will say that we are definitely abnormal.
Almost like there's infinite scales that maps can be created at, whether it's macro or the micro.
Right. So I guess that ties into, you know, why maps matter. And I think that's we're kind of answering that question, I guess, with this discussion indirectly. But I think for me, it means because it gives us context to understand where we are at and where others are at.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, why maps matter? Well, it also has to do with the relationship, right? So if you think about the initial kind of concept and that I highlight in terms of somebody saying, hey, I want to be able to go from point A to point B. Well, ultimately, point A and point B are spatially related.
Right? Yeah.
So the directions are essentially the conduit of how they're spatially related to you. And that ultimately matters, right? And that just goes to show that maps matter in my mind because most things are spatially related. And maps are
Law.
Yeah, exactly. And maps are the conduit in which those spatial relations can actually be visualized.
Yeah, that's a great summary. I think also maps matter. So they provide a visualization of something that maybe ethereal. So we talk about like voting districts, right? And you think, oh yeah, I vote in my district, right? Okay. But then in the US specifically, we see voting districts are carefully manufactured to get the party the most votes, regardless of where people live, right? It isn't as holistic as we would think it is. It's very, very specified borders being manipulated to capture that voting block, right? So I think a lot of people didn't really realize that's what happens until you see it on a map and you have that visual look at what's happening on the ground, like that providing that context for what a voting district looks like.
Yeah, Matt, I think you could say the same thing about things like school districts, which, if we try to break down buzzwords, try to put it into context for people who don't really know too much about what we do. I've been involved with the school our kids go to, and they think about things, but when you kind of come at it with our perspective, when they start to talk about like strategic planning for what the school is going to be in 5, 10, 15 years, you know, and then the data nerd me like raises your hand and says, have you thought about what the demographics are going to look like of the area that we live in? You know, the population, mm-hmm. the languages people are going to speak, that's all determines the services that the school is going to be expected to provide. And oh, by the way, we can visualize that too, right? So the map is just sort of the way to connect to people who like fundamentally understand those things are important, but then when they see it, it really clicks.
Adam, in that context, I'm curious, what do you think makes a map?
I think anything. Anything that, like you said, Catherine, anything that provides context. You know, we were watching an incredible technical update yesterday given by one of our colleagues showing data on different map projections. So data that can be shown in a lot of different ways. It can look really cool. It can show currents and temperatures of the seas, you know, and people get it right away. Like, wow, it looks like there's cold or hot water in this location where I would normally not expect it, right? It doesn't need to be some in-depth spatial analysis representation. It can really be anything to help you connect to somebody.
I like it. Maybe as part of the podcast posting, we can put a few links into interesting map ideas that aren't necessarily what you would think of with a legend and a North Arrow, but mm-hmm. more linear. I know I've seen a lot of different examples of that have helped me to kind of connect with history, like Matt was talking about at the beginning.
Yeah, that really excellent demo was done by Kira. It was Kira.
It was.
One of our panelists. Yeah, it was great. It was actually pretty inspiring for me as well. It leads to my next question. What are we mapping now? So I saw Kira's demonstration of mapping ocean currents. And one of my current projects is to map migration data and show how people are moving about the planet, either due to conflict or to climate change. And the ocean current demo kind of made me think about, well, how can I better show the movement of human migration in a way that it's not just an arrow pointing from one place to another? So first, hats off to Kira. That was a great demo. And second, what is everybody mapping right now? Not doing human migration, but I think we have lots of examples that are pretty interesting in this group.
I'm mapping property values using some of our demographic tools, which is really interesting, helping to create property banding.
I guess I'm mapping damaged buildings in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very pertinent.
I'm mapping global aviation traffic.
Yeah, and if people have seen, there's some examples of that map, sort of, online. So once we get our podcast website up, we'll have to definitely post those links, because what Mike's doing is pretty epic. And we've seen it also be animated. And you think about the amount of flights when you're sitting in an airport, and you're like, oh, it can't be that big of a deal, right? Until you see that actually plotted on a map. And then as Mike's been able to do, turn it into 3D, and you can see these flight lines like crossing each other all over the place. So it's pretty awesome. I think that also leads into like what makes a map, and it's that visual contextual element. All right, so we have just a few more minutes left in our podcast, and I think the last question I wanted to ask or post to the panel is some reading materials for people that are into maps. They want to learn more. So, what's your favorite map or map related book? And so the one that I always seem to highlight is How to Lie with Maps, and the title is definitely particularly catching to get you to read it. But it also puts into context what a map is and how maps have been used throughout history. I teach a GIS class, and it's one that I make my students read and have do discussions on. So it's really interesting. I've read it probably 3 or 4 times already, and I find something new in it each time. So that'd be my recommendation if you're looking for something to read about maps is How to Lie with Maps.
Book that came into my mind as well, Matt. That's like a really good foundational map book. I'm trying to think of one that's really good on the cartography side. And when I do, we'll put it in the links.
I think there's one by Kenneth Field on cartography that's out. That's pretty awesome.
Yes, I think it's called Cartography.
I think so.
Yeah, it is good. And then we also have the company that we work for, Esri. We have our map book. Which is not done by Esri folks, is done by our customers, and it has lots of really inspiring maps. I actually shared it with my first grade kid's teacher, and he brought it into class, and she's like, can we keep this? I'm like, oh, sure, we have plenty of them.
That's
so
cool.
They're using it to teach their mapping unit.
I want to also plug Thinking About GIS by Roger Tomlinson. If you are into GIS or maps and haven't gone through that, it kind of lays out how to think about an entire project end to end using GIS. I found it to be a reliable resource for me throughout my career.
Yeah, Roger Tomlinson will definitely be in the pantheon of GIS forefathers.
Absolutely.
One that I have not finished yet, had it for a long time, just haven't gotten back to it. It's called Maphead, and it's by Ken Jennings. He was one of the very first Jeopardy consecutive winners that set records. He just kept winning. So he wrote a book, and it starts out just sort of looking at interesting and weird geography tidbits. So the lighter side of maps, maybe, but it's pretty good.
That's awesome. I've not read that one. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, definitely. That's super cool.
Any last recommendations from the panel?
Being a national parks buff, I like the book National Parks. It maps out 62 national parks in the United States and shows all of the different trails most of the national parks in pretty great detail. So pretty fascinating.
Yeah, that's awesome. I haven't read that one either, but let's check it out.
Yeah.
I was searching for Rami, the title that I really recommend reading. It's been like I've read it a while back. It's called Design with Nature by A.M. McCarg. And that's really an interesting read on how to use maps and how to design. Like it's a landscape architecture book, but it covers a lot of these subjects.
Also cool.
Yeah, now everybody knows our secrets about what a map is and why they matter. So use the knowledge wisely, people.
For sure. Thanks, Adam. Yes, that is all we have time for today. I hope that the breadth of our discussion opens some eyes about what a map is and what a map can be and why mapping matters. And it's always our disclaimer is while we all do work for the same large GIS company, the opinions, facts, presentations, etc. given here do not necessarily represent the opinions of the company. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and stay mappy.